We can't start until you do the intro.
Maybe I don't want to do the intro.
Setlist, the music business podcast from CMU. This week, US recorded music revenue still climbing, slowly. Welcome to Setlist, the music business podcast from CMU. I'm Andy Malt. With me is Chris Cook. Hello, Chris.
Hello there.
As ever, we're going to take a look back at some of the biggest and most interesting music industry news stories of the last week. A week when TikTok rival Triller settled a lawsuit brought against it by Timbaland and Swizz Beatz, which, as you might remember, we discussed a month ago.
Yes, so that was the first of three, count them everybody, three lawsuits filed against Triller in the last month, more or less, which is a bit of a problem because the Triller company is currently prepping for and pitching an IPO, an initial public offering. It's going to list the company on some stock exchange or other, NASDAQ probably, can't quite remember which one. And I guess when you're trying to convince potential investors that you're the company to invest in, well, I suppose they're a technology company first and foremost, so they want to convince investors that their tech is the best tech on the market. But given that they are in the video streaming space, so TikTok-style short-form video, often with music within those videos, but they've also been dabbling in sort of more long-form content and live streaming and sports-type content. But I guess when you're trying to convince people that you're going to be a content-based tech company, you need to convince those potential investors that not only do you have some great tech, you also have lots of partners and supporters in music and entertainment and the sports industry, etc. So I guess having people as high profile as Timbaland and Swizz Beatz suing you, not to mention Sony Music suing you, which was the second of those three lawsuits, is not a particularly good look. So at least this particular litigation has been settled pretty quickly and seemingly amicably.
Yeah, also, I mean, pay people. Then that helps, doesn't it? Helps avoid lawsuits about not paying people. So that's my tip for them.
It is true that all three of those lawsuits, so this one, the Sony one, and then it was a sort of app consultancy business was the third lawsuit. They were all basically suing over allegedly unpaid bills. But in the case of the Timbaland and Swizz Beatz litigation, that all related to a live streaming DJ battle thing that Timbaland and Swizz Beatz launched right back at the start of the original COVID lockdown that then became a big thing online, and Triller then bought all the rights to the format in 2021. And the allegation was that they were still owed a chunk of the money, $28 million, relating to that acquisition. Triller then said, ah, no, it's not that we're late with our bills. It's that those payments were conditional on you guys doing some stuff and you haven't done the stuff. But they said in their official statement, we're talking to them. We're pretty confident we can get an amicable settlement. That amicable settlement has been reached. We don't know whether that amicable settlement involved just handing over the $28 million that they reckoned they were due, or whether something else has happened behind the scenes. Who knows? But for those of you who like to keep track of all the Triller lawsuits that are ongoing, maybe you've got a little whiteboard next to your desk where you have all of Triller's litigation listed. You need to take the Timbaland and Swizz Beatz lawsuit off it. But even though, obviously, that's a big development for anybody with a Triller lawsuit whiteboard next to their desk, it's not actually what we're here to talk about this week.
No, later on, we'll be discussing the UK live music industry's continued concerns about rising energy prices, despite government plans to help small businesses. But first, the Recording Industry Association of America, the RIAA, has published some stats about the US recorded music market in the first half of 2022, which has just happened, hence the figures. And you know what's happened? Everything's up! It's all up! There's loads of money! It's all great! The recorded music sector's retail revenues were up by 9% to $7.7 billion year on year, and wholesale revenues are up 8% to $4.9 billion. So everyone's happy. It's all good. There's nothing to worry about. Don't worry.
Let's have a party because, yeah, Ever since, what, 2015 now, the record industry worldwide, including and especially in the USA, biggest recorded music market in the world, has continued to grow, and that's a good thing for everybody involved in recorded music. Of course, we could have a big argument about how that money is shared out and say that maybe certain people, and let's not name and shame them here today, but maybe certain people are benefiting from all this growth more than others. But that's not the purpose of this particular edition of Setlist, because we've done enough on that. We thought we would have a look at these figures and how they break down. Although, if you would like some pessimism mixed in with all of these positive figures, because I think at least some people who tune in Setlist would like some pessimism. Well, some people have pointed out that while it may be exciting that the retail revenues for recorded music in the US were up 9%, as you say, for the first half of this year, wholesale revenues, so that's the money that specifically ends up with the record labels and the music distributors, up 8%, but, aha, this time last year, the RIAA was boasting that retail revenues were up 27% for the first half of 2021. Wholesale was up 25%. So that puts this year's growth rates into perspective. Although, if you're interested, if we were to go back to this time in 2020, the retail revenue growth was 5.6%. Meanwhile, wholesale 5.1%. So take your pick. Doing better than 2020, not as good as 2021 in terms of growth rates. And if you're thinking, well, hang on a second, why are we even looking at 2020 stats? That was the year when everything went wrong. Remember, not really for the recorded music side of the music industry. COVID didn't really have an impact on streaming income, which is what is powering all of this growth. So therefore, generally speaking, record industry figures in 2020 were not depressing because of the pandemic. If we go back as far as 2019, are you willing to go that far back?
Okay, but it better be interesting.
It's not interesting, but I can tell you that in 2019, retail revenues were up 18%, wholesale revenues up 16%. So I guess the point is, if you go back over the last few years, the constant is growth, and obviously that's a good thing that the figures keep getting bigger, more and more money is coming in to the recorded music market and the record industry in the US, and generally speaking, what we see in the US, we are seeing on a global basis as well. Although there has been some ups and some downs in terms of the scale of that growth, and we have some years where the growth is faster than others. So some people would say that growth is now slowing, and that's a trend, and we're going to see that for the next few years. But some people might want to be optimistic and say, hey, there have been some years where the growth has been higher and lower. Maybe, actually, the pattern, going by the RIAA's figures, is that you have a higher growth year, a lower growth year, a higher growth year. So maybe this time next year, we'll be back to those growth rates in the 20s again. Who knows?
Maybe the 30s.
Maybe we could be up to the 30s in 2023.
Dream big.
I'm going to predict not, but you're welcome to dream as big as you like if you so wish.
Now, you said that it's all driven by streaming. And of course, when we say it's driven by streaming, we mean paid streaming, not you freeloaders. And the RIAA, right at the top of its report, says that paid subscriptions grew to a record high in the first half of this year. Although given that paid streaming subscriptions have never fallen, surely it's always a record high. But anyway, there's 90 million people paying for streaming subscriptions in the US now. And revenues were up 10%, so they did get into double figures there, to $5 billion, making up almost two-thirds of all the revenue brought in the first half of 2022.
And that, as you say, is just premium streaming, paid-for streaming. And while it is true that paid-for streaming brings in by far the most money, both within digital and just generally for the recorded music market, hence why paid-for subscriptions alone bring in two-thirds of the money. But there are other streaming services too. You suggested that the freeloaders aren't helping at all. They're certainly not helping as much, But they're helping a little, because as the RIAA points out, in addition to subscription services like the paid-for versions of Spotify and Amazon Music and YouTube Music and, of course, Apple Music, there are all the other streaming services that are using music, which I guess includes the free tiers of Spotify et al. It also includes when music is used in videos on the main YouTube platform and TikTok and Instagram. Of course, in the US, you've then also got the personalized radio services like Pandora and iHeartRadio. And if you put all of that streaming money together, along with the money coming in from the sale of subscriptions, well, that category also grew by 10%. And so the total income from streaming with all the different services included is $6.5 billion for the first half of 2022. That's the retail revenues, which means that overall, for the US recorded music market, 84% of money is coming from all the different sorts of streaming services. And I say that like that's big news, but that's pretty much the same as it was this time last year. But crucially, streaming in all its many different forms is growing, bringing in ever more money. And you know, lots of analysts and experts who talk about this sector, and when I do my various presentations on this sector at events, we do talk quite a lot about the diversifying digital market. And it does seem certain that for the next 10 years, those other services that are not basically a direct replicator of what Spotify and Apple Music and Amazon Music are doing. So the user-generated content platforms that use music, the free-tier personalized radio streaming services, and of course things like the fitness apps like Peloton that use music and the various sort of gaming apps and metaverse-type things using music, all of those are going to become ever more important and account for an ever bigger portion of the music industry's digital income. That said, what the RIAA's latest figures confirm, as the IFPI figures for 2021 confirmed earlier this year, is as of now, really, it is still the sale of subscriptions by services like Spotify and Apple Music that are bringing in by far the most money.
Yeah, but if you're interested in those other bits of streaming music, well, according to the RIAA, what it calls advertising-supported on-demand streaming music, which slightly confusingly includes YouTube, Facebook and TikTok, as well as the free version of Spotify. Anyway, that grew by 16%. So once again, contradicting what I said about freeloaders, that was up to $871 million. And then the digital and personalised radio services brought in $566 million. Although that was 3% down on the same period last year. So it's those that are really letting everyone down. Oh dear.
Yeah, that's a bit disappointing, isn't it? Although I guess the declines there probably are in the personalised radio station services that I mentioned, the likes of Pandora and iHeart, which have always been, you know, pretty significant in the US, certainly in a way that they are not over here in Europe. Those personalised radio services have never really taken off over here. They used to be massive in the US, but I think, you know, the continued rise and growth of Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon Music, etc., will be having a negative impact on those services. So some people who used to use the free version or paid for version of the Pandora personalized radio service have probably been, well, it wouldn't surprise me if Amazon in particular growing its music services is having a negative impact on Pandora and iHeartRadio, which I guess I'm assuming is why that particular category, almost unique to the US music industry, is declining when everything else is growing. Should also add, I suppose, very briefly, that latter category, it's interesting how the different record industries around the world slightly categorise things differently. And actually, that latter category, the declining one, would also include the income coming in from more conventional online radio stations, which I think here in Europe, we wouldn't count that as streaming income, even though, obviously, if you are listening to a radio station through an internet channel, it is streaming, but we tend to put that in the broadcast category, because it comes through the collective licensing system, so in the UK through PPL. But in the US, even though there, it also comes through the collective licensing system through Sound Exchange, because there are no revenues at all from AM and FM radio stations in the US, for reasons that we won't go into today, the online digital radio income tends to get bundled in with streaming. So maybe that's confusing things slightly, but in the wider scheme of things, it's actually a really small part of the streaming market. And part of the one category in all of this, in terms of streaming, that did see a little bit decline in the first half of the year.
talking of declining revenues, if we head out into the further reaches of digital music, downloads still bringing in money, but the money is getting smaller. So digital track revenues fell by 19% to $113 million, and digital albums declined by 20% to $122 million, although not bringing in an insignificant amount of money. And actually, if you throw ringtones into the mix there, it gets it above $250 million, up to $256 million. Ringtones there apparently bringing in like $20 million. How can that can't be possible?
It does say...
Who's buying ringtones?
It does say ringtones and other digital download formats, but given that we've already accounted single track downloads and album downloads, I'm not quite sure what these other digital download formats are that are sitting alongside ringtones bringing all that money. And like, it's interesting, isn't it, with downloads and especially ringtones, in the wider scheme of things, it is a relatively small amount of money and it's a declining amount of money. So for the wider US recorded music market, downloads are now just 3%. But as you say, I mean, more than $250 million, that's still quite a lot of money. Who is buying these downloads and what are they doing with them? Who'd have thought people would still be downloading music and ringtones in 2022? But seemingly they are.
Well, downloads I'm not so confused by, because things, I mean, you've got DJs buying tracks to play offline. I buy tracks to play on the radio. So maybe that's the entire market for that. I don't know. Maybe some people don't pay for a streaming subscription but still want music offline without resorting to copyright infringement. It's still ringtones I've got questions about. I don't know who is buying ringtones, and I'm not sure I want to know.
Maybe other digital download formats, which remember is grouped in with ringtones, accounting for this extra 20 million of download income. Maybe that includes NFTs. Maybe that 20 million was Snoop Dogg's NFT drop. And actually ringtones brought in 47 cents. Who knows? Because while the stats and the bar charts and all the numbers that the RIAA generously sends us twice a year is very helpful, alas, they don't break down download income into quite that much detail, because at the end of the day, who cares?
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Especially as, really, when these stats get published and circulated around the industry, the only stat anybody really cares about, the only stat anybody beyond the music business press will ever report on, is the vinyl revival stat. And that's what we've left for last, because not only is streaming continuing to grow, but vinyl sales will continue to grow as well. Not quite as impressively as last year. I mean, I suppose that's a trend across the board, isn't it? But last year was a particular vinyl revival year in the US. But there was still some growth in that space this year, which means that physical formats overall still account for 10% of the US recorded music market. And nearly three quarters of that is coming from the sale of vinyl records rather than CDs.
Yeah, revenues from vinyl albums grew by 22% to $570 million, and vinyl's share of the physical market increased from 68% to 73%, taking a little bit off CDs, but only a little bit. CDs fell by 2% to $200 million and accounted for 26% of physical revenues. The other slight drop in physical revenues came from the other category, so your tapes, your mini discs, your 8-tracks, your super audio CDs, your DVD audio. What other physical formats are there? Can you still get t-shirts where it has a QR code? That was a thing for about 10 minutes, wasn't it?
Yeah, as were USB sticks, if I remember rightly.
Does that count as physical?
Well,
I guess it does.
USB stick is pretty physical.
I went to a gig recently where they were selling a USB stick with a DJ mix on it for £35. So clearly there's money in USB sticks still. Or, well, I know. The box on the merch table suggested that that wasn't actually true.
As indeed do the latest figures from the RIAA, although I'm guessing that was a gig in the UK, not the US.
It was. So we'll have to wait for the BPI figures on USB sticks, which I'm sure will be through the roof.
Meanwhile, in the US, it's all about premium subscription streaming and a little bit of vinyl revival, helping to power further growth for the wider US recorded music market. So far this year, even if that growth is not quite as impressive as it was a year ago. Nevertheless, all the key revenue streams are up. Total revenues are up. I think anybody tuning in who is part of the US recorded music industry, you should take an afternoon off and have a party to celebrate. I think that's probably the key message from all of this.
Well, these figures came out last week. I assume they did that at the weekend. But have another one.
Yeah.
You've earned it.
They're that good. I think you should be having at least 4 weekends of parties to celebrate. And I look forward to hearing how those parties went.
And finally, on this edition of Setlist, the live music and nighttime sectors in the UK cautiously welcomed details of the UK government's support for coping with rising energy prices, but also expressed disappointment later in the week that none of the other measures they say they need were included in new Prime Minister Liz Truss's first budget.
Yeah, you might remember a few weeks ago on Setlist, we talked about how various organisations that represent the music industry, the live sector, the nighttime industries had put out statements setting out just what challenge their members, venues, clubs, studios, other nighttime businesses, the challenges that all of those entities were facing because of surging energy costs. And energy prices are increasing and growing and causing problems across the world, of course, but for various reasons at that point, the problems were particularly acute here in the UK. And so as our new Prime Minister was being appointed, so those statements that we reported on Setlist a few weeks ago came just before Liz Truss was confirmed as the new Prime Minister. And basically what all those organisations were saying was, as soon as you get into number 10 Downing Street, Liz Truss, you need to do something, because if you don't, all these recording studios and venues and clubs, many of which received government funding during the COVID pandemic that allowed them to just about survive that period, they were all going to go out of business, in some cases within days, certainly as the winter months roll in. And so the organisations were saying, we need some tangible support. Everybody in Britain needs some tangible support, but specifically businesses do, because up until that point, whereas when it comes to domestic energy bills, there are caps in the UK to protect households to an extent. Now, those caps have been increasing quite a lot, and so that was a problem too. But at that point, there were no caps for businesses, which is why particularly small to middle-sized businesses, like lots of venues and clubs and recording studios, were facing a particularly big challenge. Now, since that podcast went out and Liz Truss was confirmed as our new Prime Minister, a statement was quite quickly made once she was in power to say, OK, we are going to do something that will benefit businesses as well as households in terms of their energy bills. Although initially, whereas there was clarity from the off in terms of the extra benefits that were going to be extended when it comes to domestic energy, the commitment to help businesses wasn't initially super clear, but last week we got some clarity. And in the short term, a lot of the organisations representing the music industry have said, OK, you listen, that's good. In the short term, this will help. And many of those businesses that we were predicting were going to shut down in the next few months, it will help them get through to the start of 2023. However, as you alluded to, that doesn't mean that problems do not remain. Firstly, because it's a 6-month initiative. And secondly, because energy prices were the biggest problem as of a few weeks ago, but they're just one of a number of economic and financial problems that live music and nighttime businesses are currently facing.
Yeah, so while it had already been announced that there would be a price cap for businesses, it was last week that we found out details of what that would be. So it's set at £211 per megawatt hour of electricity and £75 per megawatt hour for gas, which the government says will benefit all UK businesses, the voluntary sectors like charities, and the public sector such as schools and hospitals. It'll all take effect on the 1st of October and apply to all fixed contracts agreed since the 1st of April this year. There will be cuts for companies on other types of energy contracts, although those will be calculated slightly differently. But the government said this is equivalent to the wholesale element of the energy price guarantee for households, and it includes the removal of green levies paid by non-domestic customers who receive support under the scheme. And as you said, this will all be in place for 6 months for everybody, with further targeted support available for sectors that the government identifies as vulnerable after that initial period is up.
Now, as we say, all the organisations that speak for the live sector and the nighttime industries cautiously welcomed the specifics of this support being published by the government, although they all honed in on the fact that it is only a six-month scheme and it's not yet clear. Some optimists are hoping that maybe venues and clubs might benefit from that alluded to additional support beyond those 6 months, but that's by no means confirmed as yet. So the statements these organisations are putting out were basically saying, okay, we welcome this scheme, it's good, but what happens in 6 months' time? And as we've already said, great that you've dealt with one thing on our list of issues, but now can we get to the other issues that we have and the other support that we need? Because in addition to surging energy costs, we're still in recovery mode following, 18 months of shutdown as a result of the pandemic. There's the cost of living crisis. There's all of these other things we're dealing with. So yeah, great that you've dealt with this. Now we need help with everything else.
So Nighttime Industries Association boss Michael Kill said, "We welcome the detail of the long-awaited announcement of the Energy Bill Relief Scheme for businesses and will now cautiously work through the impacts and benefits of the scheme with members. However," he said, "to ensure the survival of our sector, it remains imperative that the short-term relief announced today is extended to 12 months and followed up with further action by the government in the budget this Friday, and that such action must incorporate our core asks, specifically business rates relief and a reduction in VAT across the board." Now, obviously, Friday has passed. The budget has come. The budget did not include those things. So the live music industry and nighttime industries remain not happy. There was some corporation tax relief, which Michael Kill also mentioned in his statement, although he said that measures such as corporation tax relief will simply not be sufficient, given that only one in four hospitality businesses would currently benefit from such measures, as three out of four are not trading profitably.
Now, Mark David over at the Music Venue Trust put out a very similar statement in many ways to the Nighttime Industry Association, likewise welcoming this support, but pointing out that 6 months is not enough, and also asking for that extra support that then did not come in the budget last Friday. Although when it comes to getting support for grassroots music venues in particular beyond the 6 months, one thing that Mark David in particular picked out of what has been said by government so far is as follows. The government, he says, has indicated that pubs will attract support for longer than the six-month initial period based on the special circumstances of the energy crisis in relation to the operation of their businesses. But what do we mean by pub? So, David continued, "We ask for urgent clarification that the broad term pub includes music venues and other licensed premises essential to the grassroots music ecosystem. And we anticipate that this should be the case."
UK live music trade body Live also put out a very similar statement, with its CEO John Collins saying, "We welcome this support from government, but we are clear that this needs to be sustained past the next 6 months. Spiralling energy prices have already forced music venues up and down the country to close or curtail their programming, and this will begin again as soon as this support is removed. It is plainly obvious that live music must be on the list of sectors considered vulnerable by the government." He then went on, "With our industry still hurting from the after effects of COVID and rising costs across the supply chain, we continue to make the case that our sector needs action on VAT and business rates if we're to keep all concert halls, arenas, festivals and grassroots music venues open, bringing joy to millions and showcasing the best UK and international talent." Now, when that support did not come in the budget, John Collins returned with a new statement where he said, "While we're pleased to see the government taking steps to alleviate the cost of living crisis, today's announcement delivers little for the UK's world-leading live music industry. Jobs are already on a knife edge, and we agree with the Chancellor that there are too many barriers in sectors like ours where the UK leads the world. Combined with the impact of reducing public spending power and rising costs across the supply chain, businesses that are already struggling to turn a profit will face bankruptcy and closure. Only the emergency measures that we've suggested to government will prevent this, injecting cash into the bottom line of struggling businesses through a reduction in VAT on ticket sales, as well as major reform of business rates."
So, while things are slightly better than when we discussed this a few weeks ago on Setlist, in that we do have this short-term support for businesses in the UK, which will help venues and clubs and studios, etc., with those surging energy costs. And maybe, if we're being optimistic, that will go beyond 6 months for many of particularly smaller, middle-sized businesses operating in music and live entertainment. But even if we take the optimistic view of what is happening when it comes to energy prices in the UK, yes, we're in a slightly better position than we were a few weeks ago. Although I think much of the doom and gloom that we talked about on that last edition, unfortunately, still currently applies, unless some major announcement is made over the weekend between us recording this podcast and it going out. But you have to think, if there was going to be any major development on VAT or business rates, the two key things that the music industry has been calling for quite some time, it would have been in that energy statement on Friday. And it was not.
No, but it was very good for wealthy people. So
it's true.
It's nice for them. Maybe they could all buy music venues with the money they're saving on tax.
The multi-millionaire pop stars within the music community have done well out of the budget. So if you're looking for the silver lining in the latest political developments in the UK, that, I guess, would be it. But unless you are a multi-millionaire and preferably billionaire musician or music business entrepreneur, then yeah, you're kind of at the back of the line. So that's fun, isn't it?
Yeah, and that's all we've got time for on this edition of Setlist. If you want to read more about anything we've discussed on this edition of the show, go and have a look at the show notes in your podcast player or at setlistpodcast.com, where there are links to everything we've talked about. Also, don't forget to subscribe to the show and rate and review the show. And if you've got anything you want to say to us, email us, setlist@unlimitedmedia.co.uk. Setlist is the music business podcast from CMU. It's presented by Andy Malt and Chris Cook. And for more on CMU, go to completemusicupdate.com.